It is a Tuesday afternoon as I'm recording this. It's a little bit later than I normally attempt this. I'm going to try and do a couple of different things throughout the show today, but we have made it. We've made it 20 episodes, and I honestly can't believe that we got this far, but hey, apparently it's 2020, and anything can happen in this crazy thing called a year. Episode 20, the bar is set. Let's go. Welcome into the Second Thoughts Podcast with your host and always Kyle Grimard. I'm going to be reaching out to a few people, hopefully over the next little bit, to try and set up just to have a guest or two on. I understand that at times it's, you like hearing two people on a show together. I've listened to a lot of shows where one individual is the host on it, one person kind of dominates the conversation, and that's what, you know, my mindset was when I first started out doing this podcast, and but I'd like to get a couple people on here and there throughout the course of it, so I will try to do that. I'll try to change it up as well, so it's not the same people on every time, but nevertheless, if there is a, you know, if there was someone that I do get on in the next little bit that, you know, you do enjoy and you go, hey, Kyle, this was a great cast, make sure you have them on again. By all means, send me a message. We stream online on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. We are on anchor.com. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Second Thoughts P. Now, last week I had some big news about making an appearance on a local news station here, 980 CFPL News in London, talking with the voice of the London Knights, Mike Stubbs. We talked a couple of London Knights that just got drafted, some Leaf updates, and just the framework of the National Hockey League and when that's going to be able to eventually take course. We'll get into that a little bit later on as well. But if you missed it, if you want to listen to it, Mike is phenomenal at what he does. He's one of the best in the business. They happen over at 980 CFPL from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And that's going to be every Friday night. I'm going to be hopping on just after 7 o'clock. And the show is called Friday Nights. Get it? London Nights, all that fun stuff. But nevertheless, I thought it was a huge success. I thought it was it went well. And if you happen to miss it, you know, it's going to be happening every Friday for the foreseeable future. But like we said, the Ontario Hockey League has started the provision to work towards beginning a season. If you missed that episode, I captured it, I believe, in the last episode. If you want to go listen back to the Second Thoughts Podcast, wherever you do get your podcast. And again, I always appreciate when you drop in a review, a good review, obviously, and make sure you follow and subscribe. Along. We're slowly getting there, 20 episodes in. And crazy enough, being November and all, there's actually a lot to discuss on the show today. We'll talk about a couple other things with the National Hockey League in regards to beginning a season and some decisions that they have actually made. Also, I'm going to go do a little segment today where I'm going to discuss some of the teams, not every team, but some of the teams that got better and some of the teams that got worse after the free agency period. So I'm not just going to do the draft, because the draft, you know, there's a few other things involved, but, you know, mainly just free agency. We'll discuss a little bit more about what the Ontario Hockey League is wanting to do moving forward with their upcoming season that they've kind of scheduled a date around. They initially talked about having no body contact, but now that is under revision. We'll get into all that and more here on episode 20 of the Second Thoughts Podcast, but I want to start with this. You know, 20 episodes into the podcast, you know, I came to realize after doing this over and over, I getting into a routine, and, you know, the hardest part about when this all started was just getting the wheels in motion. That was the hardest part about this whole thing. The National Hockey League had been sitting for some time, watching and viewing what other leagues and other teams are going to do. It's what the NHL is known for. It happened with the Black Lives Matter movement. They watched the NFL and the NBA take action, and then the NHL eventually took action. Well, this, you know, over the last week or so, the NHL has watched the Ontario Hockey League and the American Hockey Leagues take action into following up and try to get some sort of, they're trying to salvage some sort of season heading into the 2021 year. But now the wheels are in motion. So the NHL had their discussions. They had their GM meetings. The NHL, coming out of those meetings, we didn't think there was any news. They won't consider anything less than 48 games if the league plays a shortened campaign in 2021. That was a source from ESPN's Emily Kaplan and Greg Wojcinski. The NHL is targeting around a January 1st start date for the season, awarding the Stanley Cup before the Summer Olympics begin on July 23rd, being ideal, but it's not, you know, it's not necessary for the league, but that's what they would like to do, because then they would be able to get a full season that would start once again in October. Here's the quote that was said: "I think that there's some flexibility if we were to choose the route. There's not a lot left to be played out from the Olympics front too." Deputy Commissioner Bill Daley said, "We have models that extend past the Olympics time period. We have models that extend before that go beforehand. Those are alternatives that are on the table, but I can't tell you they're the ones that are necessarily going to be pursued. But I think there's some flexibility there." So obviously, the incentive is to have 82 games. It makes the most sense in the world, but mainly they would like to get at least some sort of season in for them the next year, for the 2021-22 season, because that is the expansion season for the Seattle Kraken's inaugural campaign. It's going to be the first year with a brand new U.S. TV contract. NBC's television deal with the NHL expires at the 2020-2021 season. So ideally, after that deal is done, they would like the new U.S. deal to be in place to have a full 82-game season. You don't have to come up with a whole plan right off the bat, but I like that the wheels are in motion. The wheels are slowly starting to get there. How they're going to do it, I don't know. There have been conversations about an all-Canadian division, so it would just be the seven Canadian teams, which I think would be awesome. Like, you want to talk about some of the biggest rivalries in the National Hockey League? They are all formed within. There's the Battle of Ontario between Ottawa and Toronto, the Battle of Alberta between Calgary and Edmonton. Vancouver fans are pissed because Calgary took like 17 other players, so now there's a rivalry there. You know, Ottawa is starting to heat back up, like I said. Montreal always has a rivalry when they play Toronto. Ottawa-Montreal is a rivalry at this point. Winnipeg, when they play Toronto, the Laine versus Matthews thing. Like, it feels like every time you mismatch it. Toronto-Vancouver had some of the most vicious games over the last couple seasons I think I've seen. Like, those two teams hate each other. That would be an incredibly insane, fun division. I don't think that it would get stale. I don't think it would get old. It would be like the same two boxers fighting every couple years just out of pure despair of one another. I think that would be, I think that's a really great idea that has been thrown around there. Again, nothing has come to fruition just yet. But some of the other things that need to discuss, you know, are fans going to be able to go back into the stadiums, you know, across North America, right? The NFL is already starting to do that. They have certain capacities. Like, I think the New Orleans Saints hosted a game and they had like 3,000 people there. I mean, normally the stadium seats like 75, 80,000 people, but you know, NHL stadiums have about 17,000, 18,000. So if they bring in, you know, 1,000 or so or a couple thousand and kind of sprinkle them throughout the rink, you know, is that going to work out too to generate some sort of revenue? We don't know yet. But I just like the fact that finally the wheels are in motion. They've set the bar. The bar's been set. They're not going to play anything less than 48 games for the next upcoming shortened season. The season's going to be shortened. I think that if they can do something similar to what they did this past year, or if they can squeeze in like 62 games or so, normally what, you know, an OHL season would look like for the National Hockey League, I think that would suffice. I think anything less than 60 games would be tough because you're barely over half a season at that point. If you can find a way to get two-thirds or three-quarters of a season in, because you got to understand, there's late season pushes. We watched the MLB do it. You know, they cut their season basically in half. You saw a lot of teams who, you know, at that time or at that peak would normally start to fall off. But because of the way the system worked, those teams that peaked didn't have that fall off and were able to go into the postseason. I'm thinking the Toronto Blue Jays at that point. You know, normally they started off hot a couple years ago. They end up trailing off, missed the postseason. But I mean, other than that, if you can get three quarters of a season in, like 60 or 62 games, I think that would be ideal for a National Hockey League start. Again, there's no imminent plans whatsoever right now, but I just like the fact that the wheels are in motion. That's all I care about. Wheels are in motion. Hopefully a decision gets made within the next little bit, because we're already in November. January's coming up real fast. Let's move on to this, because I talked about this beforehand before getting into the National Hockey League. And, you know, the Ontario Hockey League, sometimes you rush a decision because you want it to be the right one and you want it to be first. You know, it happens in news all the time. Is it better to be first or is it better to be right? Well, the Ontario Hockey League, the QMJHL leagues, you know, had already discussed coming back. They had made a plan. They had a start date. And I feel like the OHL went through and said, made a decision as well. But because they're younger kids, they said, all right, we're going to have a season. It's going to start in February. But no body contact. Everyone's like, what? No body contact. It got ripped apart. It got torn a new one from general managers, from executives to media to former players talking about, you know, there are players that make a living off of physicality. There are guys who impose their will based on, you know, that style of play. And there is a big part of it in that game. You know, one of Alexander Ovechkin's biggest contributors to his game is the fact that he's so physical. Right, he's on you all the time. Defensemen, Seth Jones and Zach Werenski from Columbus, they are known as a physical duo. And you got to be physical. And then the Ontario Hockey League, you know, that's you're starting to understand how to play not just physical, but physical in a smart way, because now you're at a point where you start to play against people who are older than you, who are bigger than you, who may be a little bit faster than you. You need to work some sort of physicality in there in order to give yourself an even chance. If it's all speed, skill, and you can't touch each other, that's going to play a major part into teams drafting players. That's going to play a part in players' developments, because once you make it to the NHL, if you play an entire year without body checking and then come back the next year and everything goes back to normal, A, kids are going to forget how to hit. So there's going to be a lot of dirty hits. There's going to be a lot of, not clean, proper hits. It's going to be sloppy. People are going to get hurt. However, the Ontario Hockey League will now follow scientific studies direction to form its return plan, despite the Ontario provincial government mandating that body checking won't take place in sports during the COVID pandemic. There's a quote here saying, if there are studies that really clearly state that body contact is a contributor to the speed of the virus, that obviously is something that we'll look into. That was the OHL commissioner, David Branch, said earlier this past week, Friday, on Sportsnet. He says, but we haven't looked at it yet. Lisa McLeod, the Ontario Minister of Sport, believes that removing purposeful contact is necessary to prevent COVID-19 from spreading. That's from the QMJHL, which has already seen several outbreaks influence her decision. So here's my, that's all the quotes from the Q, from the OHL, from people of higher power. You watch the National Hockey League go into a bubble. You watched it succeed with flying colors. You watch the NBA go into a bubble and exceed with flying colors. You know, there's a playoffs, Kyle. Okay. You watched Major League Baseball run a season, and after a couple instances early on with players not respecting the virus, not respecting the rules and regulations that you are given and bestowed upon yourself as a professional athlete and representing a city and an organization, cases started to dissipate a little bit. I feel it has absolutely nothing to do. I don't think it has anything to do with the players and teams that are actually playing the sport. It's what you do in your free time. It's what you do on the outside. It's what you do when the cameras are off. It's where you go. It's what you do when people aren't watching. You weren't allowed to leave the bubbles, so nothing happened. I think players, coaches, managers who are going to be a part of their respective organizations and teams for the upcoming season, obviously there's going to be no bubble. There has to be traveling. There's traveling right now. But all the cases that are taking place right now in the National Football League, a full contact sport, are taking place for players when they go home to visit families, when they're on their free time. It's not when they're with the team. It's when they come back after spending time with their families, friends, and who knows who else. It's happening on teams' bye weeks. Teams are coming off of bye weeks, and they're saying, you know, they can't come back to the facilities because on their bye weeks, they acted out. They acted stupid. Now, maybe, again, if there are studies that prove that physical contact like that in high-intensity sports where there's sweat, where there's blood, where there's all kinds of craziness going on, there's germs, there's dirty gloves and all that stuff, I totally understand that. But the way I see it was a lot of these cases that are being conducted that end up being positive happen when the players are outside of facilities. It happens when that player goes home. Happens when that player is exposed to going to the grocery store or when they're out on the streets or when they see, you know, maybe they see cousins or family who are exposed to other people and it comes back onto them. Because for the majority of the part of the NFL, when players are tested positive for COVID-19, they are separated from the team, further tests happen, and later on, it finds out that there are no new cases. They've isolated the situations. There have been games that have been canceled in the NFL. And in the NFL, where they only play once a week, they have found a way to eliminate, to an extent, the majority of the cases, limit the amount of people that do get exposed, isolate them from their teams, and allow the games to continue on, barring tests that happen before the game. Separating the two, you know, separating the divisions and having just a Canadian division to start is a great idea. Because there are three teams in the OHL that play in the States. That's step one. They should follow along with what the National Hockey League is doing. But you can't take out body checking. It is a fundamental part of the game that adds a level of evenness to the players that are more skilled and speedy and handle the puck better. How do you eliminate that as an opposing team playing against that? You get physical with them. You get hard on them in the corners. Imagine in the NHL, they had a no contact season and you had to play against Connor McDavid. Good luck. It's hard enough to keep up with him and just try to hit him off the puck. Now you can't hit him? It'd be impossible. He'd score 6 points a game. Because he'd dance around because no one can body check him. There are players like that in the OHL. Players in the OHL right now who are scoring 50, 60 goals, have 130, 40 points. It's hard enough when you can't check him. It's hard enough when you are able to check him. But now you won't be able to? Hopefully, they figure it out. They find that body contact within the league, within the players that play for those organizations, has nothing to do with spreading COVID faster. And it's a matter of being smart, being safe, knowing who to trust is in your bubble, getting tested constantly, making sure you have enough rest, making sure your immune system's up to date. Because it would be bad for everybody. Everybody, NHL scouts, NHL teams, prospects, guys trying to get drafted, guys looking to create a competitive edge on the ice. It's bad for everybody if there's no contact. I saw a tweet earlier from someone that said there can be no contact, but you can stand face to face on a face off. How does that make any sense? You might as well just have a rule, no one within 6 feet of one another. That's how you'd have to do it. Anything under 6 feet, you get a penalty. That would be the only way to do it. But it'd be bad for everybody if there was no contact. I hope that they figure it out, and I hope that they come to a conclusion that an essential part of the game is body checking is content. It evens the play out. It allows players that are less skilled with less speed to have a competitive advantage or competitive, give themselves some sort of competition against the players who are a little bit more high-end skilled in speed. Okay, now I want to get into the fun segment of the episode here. And, you know, with November now, you know, the calendar's changed, November's here. I want to talk about, you know, some of the teams that and what they addressed in the offseason and what they did specifically in free agency. And I have a list of teams here, and I'm going to go over not every team in the National Hockey League, but some of the teams, which teams got better and which teams got worse. I'm going to give the reasoning why here. And, you know, You might not like it. It's going to be an unpopular opinion for some teams. And I'm not saying that these teams are bad in any way. They didn't get better from what they started with going into free agency. I'm going to start with this team here. Boston Bruins. They did not get better. Unfortunately, they got worse. Hear me out here. Their key arrivals, the only guy that comes to fruition right now is Craig Smith. I'm not talking about drafts. I'm talking about free agency, and that's it. Craig Smith was kind of the one guy you brought in. Good signing and all. $3.1 million per season for the next little bit. But you lost Torrey Krug. To this point, to this second, you haven't signed Zdeno Chara yet. And you lost Joachim Nordstrom. Boston is not, they're not a young team. They're not, you know, it's not the reason they're not making any moves is because they have a young core that is growing into the system. You've got your guys. You've got Tuukka Rask. You've got Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak. The reason I said this at the beginning, I'm not saying Boston's a bad team. But I'm saying they didn't get better. And losing Torrey Krug hurt. And I figured that if they lost Torrey Krug, they would have replaced him with somebody like Oliver Ekman-Larsson or Alex Pietrangelo. But that never came to fruition either. It's tough when you see other teams building and changing. Tampa is a nonstop offensive juggernaut that is going and going and going. They're not on this list because they've kind of done everything that they've wanted to. They didn't bring back a couple depth pieces that they didn't need to do, and they've still got some guys to sign. But for the most part, that team's fairly intact, and all their big boys are locked up and in their prime. But Boston at this point, they're also two. You need to remember this. They're going to be missing Patrice Bergeron and David Pastrnak to injuries to start the season, if there is a season, obviously, for who knows how long. And in a shortened season, you can't give up games. You can't give up games. And for Boston, it's an uphill battle, and the season hasn't even begun yet. Next team I want to discuss here, Montreal Canadiens. Now, despite trading away Max Domi, a former 72-point player, I actually think they got better. I really do. You brought in a guy who, as an organization, feels like a player that they need in Josh Anderson in that trade. You've locked him up to a deal, paying him $5.5 million or whatever the money is, understanding and knowing that, you know, he's got to live up to that, right? He was hurt last season. He only played, I think, 23 games. He had a goal and 3 assists. You know, he is a former 27-goal guy, similar to Max Domi. But he's a bigger guy. He plays the wing. A player that, you know, they need a big physical presence to play with some of their younger centers who definitely took a step last year in Nick Suzuki and Jesperi Kotkaniemi. You also brought in Tyler Toffoli, who somehow you were able to wait out and find a way to finagle him into your contract. They are going to help in a very big way because Montreal's big issue last year was scoring. Right, scoring just was not there. Max Domi was hurt at times. Jonathan Drouin was hurt at times as well. You had guys, you know, in and out of the lineup. No one really got their feet planted within the system. Staying healthy, adding Toffoli, adding Anderson, getting a healthy Gallagher back, more budding seasons from Kotkaniemi and moving forward. That's a big, big win, you know, for the Montreal Canadiens. They also brought in Joel Edmondson, Jake Allen to kind of solidify their back end in goaltending. And Joel Edmondson at 4 years, $3.5 million. You know, it's not great, but it's a depth piece that you've locked up to decent money. Montreal had the money to spend. It's not the longest tenure. You didn't sign him to 6 years or seven. It's 4 years. But he's going to play, you know, in your top, he's going to play on your bottom pair. He can fill in a top role if you want him to. So overall, I think Montreal got a lot better after free agency, and that's not including the draft. The Buffalo Sabres, despite landing Taylor Hall and Eric Staal, did not get better. I'm sorry, you didn't get any better. The Sabres, you know, you've made these big offseason moves. Completely understand. But the problem is, There's too many question marks still on this team. Buffalo was scoring goals before. You had rookie Victor Olofsson put up 20. You have Jack Eichel. You had at times, I know he had a horrible year, but Jeff Skinner, when he was with Eichel, was the reason he had his big payday. And you brought in more scoring players who don't help defensively at all. And not just defensively, you didn't address your goaltending. Linus Allmark is your guy. He showed no signs last year of being the guy or being a guy that you can count on to be your starting goaltender. Or at the bare minimum, you didn't bring in a guy like Jake Allen to kind of make it a 1A, 1B tandem for the foreseeable future for a shortened season to at least see, hey, Linus, if we give you someone to have a little bit of competition with, how are you going to handle this? They didn't do any of that. And evidently, Eric Staal is, you know, a center that fills the number two need for the team. Absolutely. But he's like 33 or 34. He's not 27, 28. That's a lot of responsibility for him. It's a completely different culture in Buffalo. You also lost Marcus Johansson, Johan Larsson, Dominic Cahoon, and Jimmy Vesey. All very young players. Hardworking players. Guy who's a Stanley Cup. You did bring in some offensive pieces. But you have an unbalanced blue line, a huge question mark in net. I don't see them being better. We'll see how this one goes. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, believe it or not, they got better. They did. They got better. They traded away Andreas Janssen. They traded away Kasperi Kapanen. They let Tyson Barry walk. But they brought in TJ Brody. They brought in Zach Bogosian. They signed Mikko Lehtinen from the KHL, who, by the way, is leading the league in defenseman points to start the season over in Europe. You brought in Joe Thornton, Wayne Simmonds, Jimmy Vesey, Joey Anderson, who was acquired in a trade for Andreas Janssen. Toronto's back end got better when they let Tyson Barry and Cody Ceci go. I was able to watch them a little bit more closely than some other teams, understandably so. But they were liabilities on the back end. They were not a better team when those two players were on the ice. And as soon as Jake Muzzin went down in the postseason for them, it was game over. Adding a guy like TJ Brody, who is the absolute bona fide guy who is going to play with Morgan Rielly, gives them that number one pair that they've been looking for. They're not rotating players in and out of that defensive core. Zach Bogosian brings that toughness that everyone's been whining and complaining about in Leafland that they've never had. I lobbied for Zach Bogosian over the trade deadline. No one listened. He went to Tampa, played a pretty decent role when they had some injuries. He won a cup. Joe Thornton, as much as people confuse the fact of why did they sign Joe Thornton if they already have Jason Spezza, that's like complaining about getting another chocolate bar when you have a chocolate bar. Why would you complain about having two chocolate bars? It's not a bad thing. You can sprinkle them around. You can take a bite of one and leave the other. Then you can switch it out if you're getting tired of it. You can mix them together. It's not a bad thing in having too much leadership, too much wisdom on the team. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Spezza can play the wing. Thornton can play second-line power play. They're not going to be playing 17, 18 minutes a night. That's why they're paying Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and John Tavares. They're going to be the big boys. They're going to play 22 minutes a night. You're not asking these guys to do that. They are going to make a biggest difference off the ice than even on the ice. And on the ice, Joe Thornton, when healthy, can still put up 40 points in a bottom six role. Wayne Simmonds is another guy who's going to bring a physical presence to that Leaf forward group, something that they were lacking. And Jimmy Vesey and Joey Anderson are gonna battle back and forth for positions on the bottom six. Joey Anderson might even start in the AHL. Jimmy Vesey might not be to start with the team, but they have the depth. They got pieces to play around with, and the best part of all of it, they fit under the cap. That was the biggest question mark. How are they going to do all this and not fit under the cap? They did it. I understand that trading away Andreas Janssen and Kasperi Kapanen letting veteran players like Tyson Berry and Cody Ceci go. Andreas Johnsson is a guy who is a seventh round pick. He is a great story. He got hurt quite a bit. He came off of a 20-goal, 40-plus point campaign. That's when he signed his deal. And since then, has just not been able to live up to it. And Kasper, there are luxuries to have at $3.5 million on your third line. They weren't top six forwards. I don't know how they traded Kapanen for a first and a prospect, but they found a way to do that. And again, Tyson Berry and Cody Ceci, that defensive core got better when those two guys walked out the door. You don't have to be happy about it, but it's true. It is absolutely true. A team that didn't get better, New York Islanders. Sorry, I'm sorry, Islanders fans. You lost Thomas Greiss, who was one of your two tandem goaltenders. You lost a very good defenseman in Devon Taves, and you haven't brought back Derek Brassard yet. And you've brought in Ilya Sorokin. You've still got to sign Matthew Barzal. You've got to find another goaltender for Semyon Varlamov to tandem with, because I don't think he's good enough to take on the majority of that bulk of that role, especially with a shortened season, condensed games, back-to-backs. You need someone else there with you. Lule Morel has always been a guy who has waited. He's always been a guy to try and find bargains. I feel like he's waited too long. You know, unless this comes out and a day or two later they go in and sign Mike Hoffman, he is being a little too patient. You've also still got to sign Ryan Pulock to a new deal, another RFA. And you've only got $9 million in available cap space. I'm not saying that they're not going to be a good team. I'm not saying they're not a hard team to play against. But did they get better after free agency? My answer is no. A team that got better, which is great, is the Colorado Avalanche. You know, the rich get richer. A team with tens of millions of dollars in cap space, $16.4 million or $16 million, whatever it is to be exact. You brought in Brendan Saad in a trade. You brought in Devon Taves and replaced Nikita Zadorov with him. They got another great offseason. They add another depth winger to that core. You've already got Rantanen and McKinnon and Landeskog and Kadri and Burakovsky. It never ends with this team, and they just get better. They end up re-signing Devon Taves as well to a 4-year, $16.4 million deal. It is a very team-friendly deal for that caliber of player. He's going to play a big role on that team. You've already got Cale Makar. You've got Bowen Byram. You've got Kalen Addison Connor Timmins, sorry, in your defensive prospect line. You've got Sam Girard. I mean, just get another goaltender and you're laughing. And they've got the money to do it. So Colorado definitely got better. Team you're not going to like hearing this. Vancouver. You came away with Nate Schmidt, which is nice because it only cost you a third round. But Vancouver, there's no denying Vancouver did not get better. You didn't bring back Jacob Markstrom. Chris Tanev walked. You couldn't find a way to re-sign Tyler Toffoli. Troy Stetcher, a huge piece on that blue line, walked. Josh Levo is gone. I know he was hurt, but Schmidt replaces Tanev, which is an upgrade for sure. But you didn't bring anyone in to replace Troy Stetcher. The goaltending situation didn't get better because you only really brought in Braden Holtby. And yes, it's not as big of a loss there because you've got Thatcher Demko and he's going to kind of be the guy, with Holtby being that 1B, 1A type player. But they did not get better. They didn't get better. Stetcher's gone. Tanev's gone. Myers is the only right-hand shot defenseman you have left that played in that team last year. You've got Schmidt, who's going to play, you know, alongside with Hughes right below him. But man, that was it was tough watching a lot of guys go, and you were paying a lot of money to a lot of very underwhelming players, including Brandon Sutter at over $4 million, Michael Ferland at $3.5 million. You've got Antoine Roussel at $3 million, Jay Beagle at $3 million. And Josh Levo, who got paid $875 from Calgary. I'd take $875 and a player coming back from injury, knowing what he can bring to the table, than a guy like Jay Beagle and Antoine Roussel are guys that do win you cups. I will say that. Those are depth pieces. Those are players that are hard to play against, but they only come around if you make the postseason. You lost a lot of firepower. You got Pettersson. You got Besser. You got JT Miller. But you lost a lot of depth. And if that line can't get it going, it's tough to continue on with that. And then I'll finish with the last team here who did get a little bit better. That's the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, they lost Nate Schmidt. They had to trade him in order to fit one of the big free agent guys that they ended up pulling. And you lost Paul Stastny. Paul Stastny was never a fit there. Paul Stastny went back to the Winnipeg Jets. He's a great fit in Winnipeg. He is going to be fine just there. But you brought in Alex Pietrangelo. You brought in the big fish. And to a team that already had a lot of really great defensive players, Nate Schmidt, I don't think was the player that they needed in that situation. Vegas needed a guy like Alex Pietrangelo. You got Pietrangelo, and then you've got Shea Theodore. You've got your two just minute-eating defensemen. The only thing is, beyond William Karlsson, center depth's a little tough. But you've still got, Max Pacioretty locked. You've got Mark Stone locked. You know, you've got your 2016 pick in Cody Glass to provide a little bit of upside. Veteran Chandler Stephenson's there. You know, I think that this team got better despite losing those guys. I think that they have a lot of players still in their system to come up and configure. And there's still a couple players out there. There's still guys out there in free agency that have yet to be signed. So I think Vegas did get better. I think adding Pietrangelo, Paul Stastny's the one who you might have to figure out how to replace. But other than that, in a nutshell, the Golden Knights have one of the league's best blue lines. They were able to re-sign Robin Leonard. You've still got Marc-Andre Fleury, who, by the way, you can flip for a center now. You've got that depth to do that. A team that's looking for a goaltender that would give up a number two or number three centerman, you've got that flexibility in order to do that. You just got to find a team willing to do it. So those are the main teams. A couple honorable mentions here. One team that got worse, Arizona Coyotes. Taylor Hall walked. You didn't trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You didn't really address anything. You're still looking to trade off Darcy Kuemper. It's an absolute mess in that organization right now, and I don't know what's going on, and really, they did not get any better. You didn't provide any players to play with Phil Kessel. It's tough for them. Teams that got better, Calgary Flames. Why? Because they basically added all of the Vancouver Canucks players, including a number one goaltender in Jacob Markstrom. You add Chris Tanev as well. You add Josh Levo. I think Calgary was really smart. They lost TJ Brody, but you still have Rasmus Anderson. You brought in a couple other guys on the back end. I think that team filled out nicely. They got a lot deeper. They got more secure and solidified in net. I like what Calgary did. And then I like what the Ottawa Senators did. You know, they brought in Alex Galchenyuk on a one-year prove-it deal, who's going to be a depth guy going to an organization that doesn't have, you know, a ton of expectations, but guys who are going to want to prove themselves, and that's a really good fit over there. So, good on Ottawa. They also, very sneakily, Evgeny Dadonov to a three-year contract at very reasonable money, just a good depth player to kind of build around for a little bit. Maybe he becomes a cornerstone, puts up 50, 60 points for you. Who knows? But Ottawa, Calgary, bravo. Arizona, rough around there as well. So that's that segment. It's teams that got better, teams that got worse. Let me know what you think in the comments section, but which teams I'm missing from this list as well, and whether you agree or disagree. Let's move on here. Let's finish off with a couple new segments that went on. There was news involving Anthony Mantha. He signed a brand new contract with the Detroit Red Wings. It is for 4 years. It is just over $5 million. I believe just under $5.5 million, but that's a cornerstone piece, a cornerstone player who is locked up to a contract for the next little bit. I've always loved Anthony Mantha. Anytime I watch him play, whatever team that he is playing against, he gives them absolute fits and nightmares to play against. He is a big body. He has got a booming shot. He can be a difference maker on the ice when he turns it on. But I'm a big fan of Anthony Mantha re-signing in Detroit for the next 4 years. Edmonton Oilers signing forward Dominic Cahoon to a one-year deal with $975,000. 25 years of age. He split time last year between the Penguins and the Buffalo Sabres. He had 12 goals and 19 assists in 56 games. Like I said, he's only 25 years of age, but you know, he's going to get an opportunity to play with the Edmonton Oilers in a high offense that has Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Kalu Yamamoto and Tyler Ennis is locked up there too. And I will be honest, another team that has low-key done an okay job is the Edmonton Oilers. They didn't address their goaltending. Their defense, they didn't really address as well. But They locked up a couple other players. They still could be a possibility of making a trade. But you know, this is a decent signing for a team and a guy who has played up before with Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin and a guy who could do that over in Edmonton as well. Carolina Hurricanes were making moves as they re-signed forward restricted free agent Warren Fogle to a one-year $2.15 million contract. He's a 24 years of age. He had a career high in goals, 13 assists, 17 in 68 contests. He averaged just over 13 and a half minutes of time on ice for Carolina. He was drafted in the third round all the way back in 2014. He kind of really made a name for himself within that organization. And with that move too, Carolina has now signed all of their restricted free agents. They are done moving pieces. They are done at least signing guys. They might have to get a trade to move out a couple players on the back end, but other than that, I think they did a good job re-signing all their guys, and they're not a fun team to play against. And you know, I think their younger players are going to continue to grow, and Warren Fogle was one of them. Dallas Stars signed defenseman Julius Honka to a one-year two-way contract. He had 15 points in 46 games in Finland last season. He's 24 years of age. He went overseas after, you know, being unable to work out a deal with the RFA team in Dallas this past year. Now, Honka is the 14th overall pick in the 2014 draft. He's only played in 87 games. He spent the majority of his career in the AHL or as a healthy scratch with the big club. If you remember earlier too, Honka had actually requested a trade out of Dallas. Nothing really materialized. You know, he's only 24. I know he's a defenseman, and defensemen take a little bit longer to develop, but you know, Dallas has got, you know, Miro Heiskanen and John Klingberg, and you know, they've got Esa Lindell, and you know, they got a couple other guys there, and I really think that, you know, if defensemen take longer to bud, I don't know enough about him to be like, this is going to be the year he breaks out. But defensemen do take a little bit longer to mature and to age and to get, you know, integrated into the system. And, you know, see what comes in. Maybe he plays in the AHL again. If he starts, you know, if he comes out and starts playing, you know, pretty consistently and has a step in his game, then, you know, who knows at that point. But low signing with Dallas, nothing too crazy there. And then lastly, I just want to touch on this one player because we're going to end the podcast after that. Mike Hoffman. Still a free agent. A lot of teams have expressed interest in him. He's 30 years of age and, you know, is almost like a perennial 30 goal scorer. But people are saying that all the offers have been, quote, bargain city, according to The Athletic's Pierre LeBrun. He led the free agency class in goals this past season. He's been one of the NHL's best scorers, like I said, over the last little bit. He's averaging close to 30 goals over an 82-game pace, and only 15 players have registered more markers than Mike Hoffman since the 2014-2015 season. He said that Mike and his team are being very patient. I think that he's going to go to a contender, or he's going to go to a contender. He's going to take a little bit less money. He's going to sign a one-year deal. He's going to light it up with that contender, win, and then be due for another payday. Or he's going to go to a team where he's going to get a prominent role, where he knows it's a flat cap, that he can sign a one-year deal at like $4.5 to $5 million. He's going to get big ice time. He's going to put up 30, 35 goals and 65, 70 points. And then he's going to go back into the open market and he's going to try and get a big ticket. And honestly, I understand why he's being patient. Don't sign a three-year deal at $4.5 million. Then you're 33. Then you're kind of past it at that point. Sign your one-year deal. Sign it at four and a half, whatever the case may be. Go light up the National Hockey League. Now, I understand, too, that Mike Hoffman comes with his, with some concerns, with integration within organizations. Obviously, there was that debacle that happened in Ottawa. You know, it took a little bit for him to kind of invest himself into Florida, but you can't deny the fact that he had 29 goals and 30 assists in just 69 games this past season. He had 36 goals and 17 points in the 2018-2019 season. He was great in Florida. Yet it was a great fit there. He put up a lot of goals. He put up a lot of points, and he meshed very well with that organization. Him waiting it out, being patient right now is probably the best thing for him. But whatever team gets him, whatever he makes, they're going to get him at a discount. Whenever can you get a 30-goal scorer at under $5 million? It's unheard of. It is unheard of. And that could be happening at least for a season for Mike Hoffman. I predict he's going to go to a team like Colorado. I know because they have a lot of money, but a team like Colorado or a team like, you know, if they can find the room for it, a team like Edmonton or something like that, or a team like Calgary, if they can finagle it in there. I don't think they can, but you know what I mean there. Like a team that's looking to give him a prominent role and have a chance to win a cup. But I also can see him going to a team like Detroit or a team like Buffalo to sign 1 year, to put up a lot of points, to know that you're probably not going to make the postseason, but you're going to have numbers that for the next free agency, you're going to have an opportunity to cash in. And you know, we'll see what happens to Mike Hoffman. He's kind of the one big remaining players. Sammy Vatanen is a defenseman that's still available. A lot of players still available, but you know, a couple months still, we'll see what the National Hockey League plans to do, but like we said to start this podcast, it will be nothing shorter than a 48-game season if the league were to play in 2021. That is it for episode 20 of the Second Thoughts podcast. I've been talking for a very long time. I'm going to get out of here, but make sure you stream along on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Feel free to follow along on Instagram and Twitter at Second Thoughts P. Like I said earlier, I'm going to be on Friday Nights. That is a program on 980 CFPL News with the voice of the London Knights, Mike Stubbs. That shows from 6 to 8 o'clock every Friday evening. I hop on for about a 10-minute segment just after 7 o'clock, and I talk about the podcast. I talk about what's going on around the National Hockey League and all kinds of other fun things. But that is it. Until the next episode, that's a wrap.